Good morning. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rattay and his hapless sidekick, Christina DeRocher. We thank you sincerely for tuning in to listener-supported independent radio 91.9 WDRT. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Hapless? What's the opposite of hapless? Is it hapful?
Yes.
Half full, right?
Cup half, yeah, right.
Half empty, half full. Yeah, good. It's, you know, June.
That's right.
And the weather's fantastic.
It is.
Right? It's not quite hot, hot, hot.
I know. It's that beautiful spring, summer mesh.
Yeah, should we go from weather to carbohydrates? Do they like kind of mesh together, sort of?
Or
how can we make that transition?
I think you eat more carbohydrates in the warmer weather, so we need to be thinking about it now. We need to be preparing.
When it's available to us, yes?
Right.
And how much of our time do we spend storing carbohydrates?
And how do we
preserving them? And are carbohydrates even worth preserving? Think about that. I mean, think about, like, if we're trying to preserve something, if we're back 500 years ago, what did we want to preserve?
Vegetables.
Vegetables? But vegetables, okay, what's the value of a preserved vegetable?
Winter. That's what I think about.
Yeah, winter, but specifically what vegetable would we want to preserve?
What do we preserve more of? Beets and...
Yep, beets.
Green
potatoes.
Beans.
Right, things that actually had some caloric value.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
We're all about calories, right, in survival mode.
Yeah, you don't really preserve radishes, for instance.
Yeah, you could.
You can, but I rarely see it in someone's basement. Yeah.
And so we would preserve those things, so that would give us immediate energy, but perhaps what was even more important to preserve?
Meat.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, right.
Because we need the protein source, right? Protein, we're not going to last very long without. Carbohydrates and fats, we go a long time without eating those. They're nice, right? I mean, carbohydrates, certainly an energy source and keeps us from breaking down our muscle mass, which is a good thing. It's what we call protein sparing. Carbohydrates are protein sparing.
Okay.
So here's the story behind that. I think this is worth talking about for a minute. So protein sparing means you're sparing the protein. And what protein are you sparing? Specifically your muscle mass, right? Because think about it. We have a lot of muscle mass. That's a lot of potential energy that we're storing in our muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And if we need that, we'll use that, right? So if we're in a starvation or extended fasting, we will start harvesting our muscle mass. That's not good weight loss.
Right.
And that's the problem getting on the scale, because we don't know which... Are we losing muscle?
Are
we losing fat? And this is part of the deal, too, with diets. Like, how much muscle mass do you lose on some of these diets? And that would be the value of exercise, is to make sure that you're maintaining or potentially even building the muscle mass.
Okay.
Anyway, so protein sparing means that if you don't eat a carbohydrate, your blood glucose stays normal. And your blood glucose doesn't go down to 20. Normal blood glucose would be 80, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So your body's constantly regulating blood glucose to keep it at 80. So if it goes high, right, you eat a carbohydrate meal, whatever, it goes to 150, goes to 200, goes to 300, you would never know. And then your body secretes insulin to get it back down to 80. So there's that drive, right, prime directive to get it at 80. Well, what happens when you don't eat a carbohydrate? Then it starts to fall. Yes, so now you're not at 80. Now it starts to go down. But it's not going down like this. That was reactive eating that we already talked about.
Not going straight down, for those who are listening and not watching.
Yes, straight down. So it's more gradual, so over time. But then the body kicks in and says, oh, wait, now we're at 78, or now we're at 76, or now we're at 70. So it's declining. So then the body's metabolism, biochemistry, kicks in to say, oh, well, we want to keep that blood glucose at 80. So it does that. It secretes hormones to get that to happen. And glucagon and cortisol are the two kind of major ones that play a role in maintaining the blood glucose. So in other words, long story short, is that if you don't eat a carbohydrate, you've got a mechanism in place to keep your blood sugar at 80, even though you're not eating any carbohydrate. Because people would say, oh, my blood sugar is going to go, my blood glucose is going to go really low, really low. No, not when it's the slow, gradual decline, right? So last month we talked about the steep decline.
Yeah.
So the slow, gradual decline, and your body adapts to that. But so what does it use to make glucose then? So we don't have glucose available. I mean, we don't have carbohydrates available, which would be glucose.
Right, right.
So what are we then turning into glucose?
It takes the muscle mass?
Well, it takes protein.
The protein.
It'll use protein. And some other things too, but protein is sort of a major backup source for glucose if you're not eating carbohydrates.
Okay.
Right, this is Atkins diet on some level, right? Atkins, you know, you don't eat any carbohydrates, so then you're using protein to maintain your blood glucose. But where's that protein coming from? Maybe what you ate, but maybe your muscle mass.
Yeah.
We don't want to go for the muscle mass.
How long you carbohydrate fast.
Correct. And it'll happen rather quickly, and there's all sorts of different things that happen in sort of intermediate fasting phase and long-term fasting phase and just how the body adapts to it. It's actually quite, I mean, very interesting, I think. It is biochemistry, but just how the body is not just, you know, you've eaten or you're not eating. So typically when we talk about nutrition, we talk about the prandial state and the postprandial state, right? Or fasting state and the postprandial, right? Fasting meaning I haven't eaten, and then what happens after I eat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one or zero. Either you're fasting or you've eaten.
Post-eaten, yeah.
But there's all the spectrum in between.
Right.
Yeah, so all this, like, how do we adapt? How do we adapt after 6 hours of fasting? How do we adapt after 12 hours fasting? How do we adapt after 24 hours? How do we adapt after 6 weeks?
And by adapt, you mean what's happening inwardly.
Yes.
For that homeostasis to be maintained.
Homeodynamics, I like even better. Because
okay.
It's constantly, you're constantly shifting. And the body will say, oh, at first it'll use more protein, but then after about a day or two, the body says, oh, wait a minute, we can't keep harvesting muscle. Or, you know, we don't want to use muscle, so we're going to turn that, we're going to flip the switch to doing other mechanisms to play a role in this.
Mm-hmm.
So we can adapt to fasting. That's what we do. That's what we've, that's our biochemistry has allowed us to go a long period of time without eating.
Since the beginning, the dawn of eating, eating on the earth.
As I have somewhere in here, right? I'm skipping around.
Yeah.
People that are overweight, obese, they have a hard time going a long time without eating. It's hard for them. Whereas, you know, native cultures would be, I told you the story from, this is from Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that book?
No, you lent it to me, and then I kept on parenting returned it to you. At some point, I will read it.
So Guns, Germs, and Steel is just that there's a story in there where he's dropped off in the highlands in New Guinea because there he's a bird watcher, ornithologist, studying birds. So they're dropped up in, you know, middle of nowhere to find birds that you've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So he had native New Guineans that are there that are his guides. And then, you know, then all the Westerners that are there as well. And they got dropped off by a helicopter and they forgot to drop the food off. So there's no food.
That guy needs to be fired.
Yeah, exactly. And so all the Europeans, are like, what are we going to do? We don't have any food. Oh my God, we're going to die. And the natives are like, no big deal. We'll just eat, you know, if it's two days or 3 days, no problem. We'll just wait till the food's there. Right? What a different aspect or approach to food, yes?
Right.
Being one of, you know, how much do I need and how much do I really need versus, oh my God, I got to have it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, this is the culture that we live in. This is the food culture that we live in, right? That we have the availability, we have the affluence to buy organic produce, right? We can make a choice with our dollar to do that, or we can eat at McDonald's and eat really cheap, or we can do all sorts of things. I'm going to argue native cultures don't have that.
Right.
500 years ago, we didn't have that unless you were royalty. Yes. I mean, royalty would have access to all sorts of things.
Right.
Kings and queens.
And the story usually goes that they're the ones who are overweight and not living very long and having health issues.
Correct. And what is it today? Where do we see what socioeconomic status has the highest rates of obesity, the highest rates of diabetes,
now,
chronic disease?
Wouldn't that be the most poor?
Yeah. So you would think the most poor don't have the money or the resources to overeat food.
Right. But the difference is...
that doesn't happen in the United States.
No, it doesn't. Because the difference is now we have pseudo food. We have food that's sort of pretending to be food that's empty calories, right?
Exactly.
And those are so cheap.
Exactly. And the food industry makes money even though it's dirt cheap. Because that's what their motive is.
Yeah.
They're profit driven, and it's like, how do we drive more calories into more people, or how do we provide calories that are cheap and easily accessible and they taste good and people will continue to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see the lower socioeconomic status is the is the group with more health problems. Like, that's just counterintuitive. Yes,
yeah,
you would think
actually.
That they wouldn't have the food.
Right.
You know, it's like fasting by necessity rather than fasting by choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we could talk all about, oh, intermittent fast, which I do, but the idea is I have to choose not to eat.
Correct.
In other cultures, there is not a choice thing.
The choice is made.
It's like, how do we make this last?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's better on our metabolism, right? I think, again, the whole point is that we've been designed to deal with a famine.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been designed really well to deal with excess all the time.
To eat five times a day.
Yeah, it's just a burden on us. It's a burden on our metabolism. And insulin is one of the major mediators of that to deal with the excess. But we've got all the other hormones that are like working opposite of insulin.
Mm-hmm.
So insulin's the only one that's dealing with the fed state. Whereas cortisol, glucagon, thyroid hormone, you know, reproductive growth hormone, these kinds of things are all working in opposition. We call them counter-regulatory hormones.
Hmm.
But there's a lot of them. Just knowing that there's a lot of hormones to make sure that you maintain your blood glucose and maintain energy when you're not eating versus only one hormone that's working to deal with the top end, right, to get it back down to deal with the...
With the overage.
The excess, right? Or when we eat, because we always eat more than we need, right? It's not like you eat and you eat carbohydrates and you say, oh, I eat enough carbohydrates for the next 2 hours. Like, what is that? Like, what's that amount? And that would be ideal, right? Ideal would be exactly what do I need? What is going to be my energy expenditure over the next 12 hours or whatever? And how would I best meet that?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't think about it. We just do it. And our body gives us signals that that's working or not working. And how do we listen to those signals?
So
we override the signals because we're, you know, bored and we're tired. And I mean, yeah, that happens, but we have that food available to us, right? It's available everywhere. I mean, I go home, right? The
pantry's stocked, the fridge
is full. The pantry's stocked, and then bad weather's coming. What do? You go buy more.
Right.
I mean, how long could you live in your house right now?
A year.
A year.
Seriously, I have so much grain and beans and even the meat, the little fish that I put in my Caesar salad and that kind of thing. Yeah.
A year.
I could go a year. I would need fresh vegetables, but I am very confident that I could find those and or grow them in my backyard if I needed to.
But would you need them? Would you need them for survival?
Oh, good question. Good point. I mean, as a macrobiotic person, right? As an ex-macrobiotic,
sure.
So to speak, it's very hard not to think about vegetables. But
yeah, and vegetables bring a lot to the table, but they don't bring much energy unless they're starchy.
Right.
And
right.
What's going to keep us alive? Calories. Protein.
Protein is
right.
What
calories for. I mean, calories for sure, but protein will be the thing that gets us into trouble of the macronutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we need B vitamins and we need to prevent pellagra and we need to prevent scurvy and we need to prevent these things for sure. But again, big scheme of things, it's not going to kill you in the short term. It's going to be a little longer term.
Hmm.
Scurvy, maybe 3 months. I mean, you'll start to develop symptoms from that.
Yeah.
So you need a vitamin C source.
Hmm. Which would be?
Citrus.
Right. But if you didn't have citrus, because does that keep for a long time?
The vitamin C?
I mean, citrus, specifically.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you get if it's, like, I mean, whatever, orange juice or whatever, it's going to have vitamin C in it if it's...
Okay.
Sure. But you get it from animal sources, too. I don't know if I told this story. Probably I did.
I don't know, because you haven't started it yet.
I mean, look, we're how far in? Yeah. That's okay, but it's all relative.
It's all related.
It's all relevant on some level. Right? I teach my students all it's relevant and valid, right? Is it relevant first,
uh-huh.
And then is it valid second? You don't ask the valid question first. You need to know, are we in the right ballpark?
Right.
Anyway, so vitamin C, so the natives, Weston Price,
yes.
The dentist who traveled all over, he's in northern Canada, and these are people that didn't have access to the ocean. And where do they get vitamin C from? And there's a bunch of dead trappers, you know, trappers that would come up and they die of scurvy.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get scurvy, so why didn't the natives get scurvy? And he asked them that, and they had asked their elder, can we tell this guy, you know, what we do? And yeah, we could. So what happens is they butcher a moose, right? They mm-hmm. harvest a moose. When they harvest the moose, they keep the tissue behind the eyes and they keep the adrenal glands, and they're basically everybody in the tribe gets a little piece of adrenal gland or gets some of the tissue behind the eyes. Why? Because those are sources of vitamin C.
Oh.
So eating muscle meat isn't giving you that. If you use all parts of the animal, then you're getting that.
Got it.
Again, we're so wasteful in this culture, right? Oh my God, do you have any cow adrenal, right? We don't see that at the co-op. We don't, you know. And I've had that, right, where I've butchered a cow, I can't remember, but looking for the adrenal gland. So they're hard to find too, because there's layers of fat on top of your kidney, uh-huh. and they're not very big.
Wow.
But again, that's a source, it's a crucial source, a concentrated source of vitamin C.
Wow.
So they knew that. They knew that they ate that they didn't get scurvy. They didn't know what scurvy was. They didn't know what vitamin C was. But they said, if we do this, then this doesn't happen. True science from my perspective. Like, why do we have to label things?
Right.
But there you go. So if you're, again, eat the tissue behind the eyes and the organ meats.
Okay.
So you harvest that deer, you better find the adrenal gland.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you won't get scurvy. So there's a little survival tip.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Anyways, so we transition to the empty calories, because that's certainly what we're supposed to talk about. So the refining of the carbohydrates and empty calories. So refined carbohydrate, I think pretty straightforward, right? That we've done something to the native source to make it, have a longer shelf life, or to use as something else, as a component to something else. And the food industry is just,
Amazing
at that, mm-hmm. right? And they're, again, profit-driven, not necessarily health-driven. So they're going to do things because there's a profit to be made rather than there's health benefits. Now, they'll use health benefits to sell their food, but that's not their prime directive.
Right.
Whereas maybe in your kitchen, you're more health-driven than you are profit-driven.
Oh,
so what are
yes.
the things that I can do to help improve my health versus what do I let the food industry do because I don't have time to spend in the kitchen?
Right. Yeah, or I'm trying to save money, so I'm just going to buy Frito-Lay or whatever, you definitely vote with your dollars.
Exactly. So, I guess that's a refined carbohydrate, but the point here is that you could let the food industry refine it, or we could refine it ourselves.
Which is the processing in your kitchen,
cooking, or you preparing it, or you taking, wheat berry, right? You know what a wheat berry looks
oh,
like,
yeah.
for sure,
for
right?
sure
big
I
kernel
do.
Of rice.
Yeah. I mix it in with my rice sometimes when I cook rice.
Exactly. So you can take that, the wheat berry, you're not going to make bread out of a wheat berry, yes? So you got to crush it.
Right.
And you could get a stone, and you could stone grind it, right? You could do it by hand. It's kind of labor intensive, but then they eventually develop mills that'll stone grind it. But what's stone ground wheat berry look like?
Flour?
Sort of. It's kind of flour.
Yeah.
It's chunky. It's just a mixture of things, but it's processed enough
mm-hmm.
that now you can turn that into bread.
Correct.
But there's going to be chunks in there, right? It's not uniform, perhaps.
Right.
Whereas flour now is uniform.
Yes.
Right. So that's the food industry saying, oh, well, we have the technology now to finely mill all the flour. And whether it's wheat flour or we take it out and it's white flour, it doesn't matter. We have the technology. Right. And this is, again, maybe I mentioned the Mill City Museum in the Twin Cities. Have you been to the Mill City Museum?
Yeah, no, I haven't, but you've mentioned it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Beginning of the end, as far as I'm concerned. It's kind of glorifying Pillsbury and General Mills, which, in my opinion, is not glorification. Yes, this is like the beginning of Betty Crocker, the beginning of the Pillsbury Doughboy, all this kind of thing. This is like they now had finely milled flour that they could turn into like 500 different things.
Right.
Cereal, bread mixes, biscuits, and things that were readily available, right? Instead of you making a biscuit at home and you have the wheat berry and you got to turn that into some kind of flour source or something that you can cook with and make something from. Much more labor intensive.
Which begs the question, how often are you going to do that if you have to go through all of that? And so how healthy were we? We did have more unprocessed grains then when you had to do it yourself than we do now when you can go to the store and buy flour, right?
Yeah, and they developed, again, that technology that's in the 1870s to finely mill the flour. And that's basically in Mill City Museums on the Mississippi River. It's just, it's one of those milling places and just going through, here's what they did. And I'm like, wow, that's bad.
Yeah.
It's not
right.
a good thing. Now we have cereal. And I mean, cereal.
Cereal.
How many different kinds of cereal? Like what? Cereal is natural? What is it? There's nothing natural about cereal.
No.
A Cheerio? A weedy? Like, weedies are supposed to look like something that's like a whole grain?
I mean,
we make
whole,
it look that way because they make a mold that forms that?
The whole idea that breakfast should be anything other than last night's leftovers is ridiculous as
for
well.
Sure.
I mean, just this idea that it has to be, you know, almost exclusively carbohydrates, right?
Yeah, so we break our fast with a carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is that the best way to break a fast? I'm not sure. Can we? But that's what we do, and
yeah.
That's what we're trained to do. And you know, eat leftovers for breakfast. I mean, that's just ideal as far as I'm concerned.
I know. I wish I could get my daughter in on it.
But. So I'll just digress. Not that I ever digress, but the one of the popular diets. So I have my students all. They have to do a popular diet report, right? They have to pick a popular diet book, and they gotta.
Do a report on it.
They got to praise it, right? Which means they got to find some bad things, which they're kind of bad. They're not bad at it. It's hard for them to find the bad things because they read the book and the book is all like, oh, this is the latest, greatest diet. And they'll often say, oh, yeah, I'm going to try this diet. Yeah, I mean, this is students. I'm like, well, it worked, right? So now you're going to follow this. It is just another fad diet.
Right.
And it's fine. I mean, I'm not opposed to following a fad diet, but a fad diet, does it work for you? Is it sustainable? Is this something you can do for 20 years? Or is this something that's going to last for 3 months and then you're going to pick up another diet book, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine what the publishing industry is interested in. Not that you buy one book and it lasts for the next 30 years.
Right.
Buy a book every 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. But your digression.
Yeah. So the digression is, now I've forgotten my digression.
Well, it's a perfect time to say thank you again for listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Ratay and Christina DeRocher. Thank you for listening to listener-supported independent radio 91.9 WDRT. I'm also going to take a moment to tell you about the year-long lecture series that Paul Ratay is offering at the Commons on Jefferson Street. He is now in his 7th month on Saturday, July 8th from 8:30 till 10 in the morning. From his Obstacles to Cure lecture series, he will be talking about inflammation. Is inflammation the cause or the effect? So 8:30 to 9 is a half an hour Q&A. That's you bringing questions from any topic, including inflammation, but doesn't have to be, followed by 1 hour of a lecture. And goodwill donations are accepted, but it is a free event on Saturday, July 8th. Did you remember?
I did remember.
Oh,
thank
good
you.
For
that's
you.
What we need. We
that
need
would have been
pause,
totally distracting
right?
for me.
Universe is taking care of things, yes.
That's right.
So
that's
the
right.
popular diet book, which is just classic, The Reverse Diet.
The
Reverse Diet. And you can, and I can't remember who the author is, but he's written like 3 or 4 other diet books, right? So if you're a diet author, what happens? You come up with another diet book. You
oh
keep publishing,
gosh.
Right? Isn't it enough to just say, hey, I did this. It's done. This is it.
If
like,
I
why
knew,
am I doing another diet?
If I knew a diet writer wrote more than one diet book, I would never buy any of their books.
Oh, well, then you wouldn't buy any popular diet books. Well, they got to write a first one, though.
Do they
yes,
all write? Well, right. Well, okay, let me amend that. If they wrote something that was completely different,
yes.
right? I mean, if you're writing about keto and then you say, here's the next idea I have layered on top of keto, I could understand that. But if you're writing, you know, South Beach diet, just kidding, vegetarian, just kidding, you know, Italian style or Mediterranean is what I meant.
So those authors are ones that are normally like editors of, I think whoever wrote this, I can't remember his name, was an editor of Men's Health magazine or something. So that's he's
getting all these ideas.
He's just spitting out different diets. And you're like, wow, well, what about the last diet that
right.
you recommended? Or, you know, diet books will come out and then they'll have the... You know, the South Beach Diet for Vegans and the South Beach Diet for Children and the South Beach Diet Cookbook. And you're like, really? Really?
Even that,
really?
I could buy a little bit. Just,
hey,
you
okay,
know,
that's a little bit. But
in macrobiotics, they say feed your children less salt. If you're, you know, if you're not an adult, you should be eating less salt. And so the South Beach Diet for Kids, I could kind of see that.
It's money grubbing. Right?
I know.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, so the reverse diet, we can look it up. I mean, it's an older book. I'm sure it's $26.99 for a 300-page book.
Even now.
Well, you buy it used, probably get it for 99 cents. So maybe that would be better. Just buy old diet books so you don't pay very much because those ideas are recycled constantly.
Constantly.
Anyway, so the reverse diet. So I ask students this on their appraisal. I say, so how many pages would it take to write your book, really to write your book that you read? 300 pages? Does it take 300 pages to write a diet book? No.
No.
There's a bunch of filler in there. 100 pages of recipes, 100 pages of, you know, exercises to do and all the anecdotal stories. So I got to like set the hook, right? It's just this whole ongoing process. So the reverse diet is just classic because it takes one sentence. I don't know how many words it is. You don't have to buy the book. Well, 99 cents. But what's the reverse diet? Eat breakfast for dinner and dinner for breakfast. That's it. That is the whole diet in one sentence.
Seriously?
Yeah, just switch breakfast and dinner on. That's all you do. Just eat the same thing. You drink soda for breakfast, did you drink it at night? I mean, I'm not saying, let's look at that. Just reverse them around because for the most part, dinner is where we do okay with.
Right.
Breakfast is where we don't do okay with.
Right.
In general, because we're in a hurry.
So his idea is start strong. And then also you're working it off. That's what I would say. If you're drinking soda for dinner, then I tell Annalena all the time, if you're going to have dessert, have it after lunch. Don't have it after dinner. Don't go to bed on a dessert. And then if you're eating breakfast for dinner, you're eating less. And theoretically, you usually have a smaller breakfast than you do at dinner. And then you're also, I don't know, sleeping off the carbohydrates.
Yeah, sort of.
Carbs do help you sleep.
And think about it, too. I mean, part of this is what happens after you eat that meal. So you can eat something and it will provide you energy, right? So this is kind of the refined carbohydrate story.
Right.
Is it gives you that energy, right? Quick energy. And the food industry is interested in that. They'll deliver quick energy to you. That's why we're now eating five times a day, right? 5.3 times a day versus 3.5. That's the number of eating occasions.
Yes.
Used to be 3.5 in the late 70s, and now it's like 5.2.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd eat three meals and one snack every other day is what it used to be, and now it's like five meals a day. And is it even meals? Are those even meals? Mm-hmm. There's probably maybe one meal and then four kind of extended snacks.
Right, right.
So we can't eat. We're just eating more frequently, and who wins on that?
The
food industry
wins
every time because you're going to get shortcut foods that are readily available that you could keep in your pocket or you keep in the car or, you know, you can easily access and you've got it. Boom, good to go. Oh, I get my little energy fix.
Right, right.
So that's what they're, you know, working on. But again, the idea with the reverse diet is to say the reactive eating, which we talked about last time, right? So what you eat for breakfast will then have an effect on what you eat for lunch.
Yeah.
So if you eat a breakfast that sticks to your ribs or whatever, it extends, then it's like you're not seeing that fluctuation in your blood glucose, and then you're not in a reactive eating pattern. You make
better choices for lunch.
I'm not as desperate.
Yes.
Versus you start your day with a bunch of carbohydrates and specifically refined carbohydrates. You get on that roller coaster and you ride in the roller coaster all day long. And it's a problem.
And so the reverse diet helps with that because you're doing that, you know, silly choice that, you know.
Yeah, the silly choice before you go to bed. And probably you're not going to wake up at 1 a.m. and say, I got to eat something.
Right.
I mean, if you do, then you got a blood sugar problem, and that's another story.
Right.
But for the most part, you're asleep.
Yeah.
And carbohydrates, I mean, they're not bad guys.
No, no.
They help boost your serotonin. They do other things. I mean, I'm, you know, as fond as I am of a ketogenic diet, I don't think a ketogenic diet is necessarily a long-term option for most people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of a cleanup to say, hey, if I balance my blood glucose, do I feel better? And again, taking out those refined carbohydrates are a big part of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, the next step on that is the micronutrient thing, right? This is where the food industry spins things too, is that we're no longer eating food, right? We're eating micronutrients or we're eating macronutrients. So we eat carbohydrates or we eat saturated fat or we eat dietary fiber or we eat vitamin D. Yes. So we eat all these various micronutrients, which we do need. Don't get me wrong, right? We need that vitamin C. The question is that we've gone down the rabbit hole that nutrition is about these individual nutrients instead of these foods kind of synergistically containing all these different things. Like, we don't eat avocado anymore. We eat monounsaturated fat and fiber and vitamin E, right? That's what's in an avocado.
I did not
know
that.
Yeah, and there's other things too, but that's just the sense that's how we, you know, that's reductionism.
Right.
Instead of like, I got to eat the adrenal gland to prevent scurvy, it's like, oh, I'm eating an avocado because it's good because it has this, and it's good because of this, and then meat is bad because it has saturated fat, then we label things.
Yeah.
We love labeling, and it's like, can we just can we take a step back from the label and just look at the food?
And the context of how you eat that food.
Yes,
too.
Yes. Yeah. So this whole idea of, you know, micronutrients being good guys because the food industry uses that. Yeah. So then it becomes whole grains are good guys. Vitamin D is a good guy. I don't know. You've seen, you know, breakfast cereal, Cocoa Puffs, now containing 100% of your vitamin D and made with whole grains and all these kinds of things. I'm like, you're kidding me. That's a label claim. And yes, they're doing something, but they're modifying that.
Right.
Right. They're adding it in there.
The vitamin D is not coming in the natural context of the ingredients that they've put together to make that cereal.
Yeah. Plus vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin. To really even absorb vitamin D, it needs to be eaten with fat.
So if you take Cocoa Puffs,
well, yeah, but you put skim milk on it.
Yeah. Right.
Zippo. Right. Mm. That's just like eating the salad, right? To get the beta carotene, which is fat soluble, you need to have some kind of salad dressing where there needs to be fat, a fat source, right? Not a low fat dressing, but olive oil. Or you could put avocados in there too, right? I mean, something that's got a fat source on it.
Yeah.
Put sardines on it.
Yes. That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
The fish for the Caesar salad. The
sardines. Or no, anchovies.
Oh, no, that's anchovies, right?
Yeah, anchovies.
I love anchovies.
But if you don't eat sardines, the best way is to put them on a salad. That's how I started eating sardines.
Nice.
Then you become a sardine connoisseur. And still canned food, yes, and it's preserved, but right. Oh my gosh. Anyways. So, there's this kind of that tension, I don't know, between macronutrients and calories. So we talk about empty calories. So you're just eating something for calories. It doesn't have any micronutrients in it. It's like, oh, I got to eat the micronutrients. But really, at the end of the day, it's the energy and calories that we're driven to eat. I guess there's some debate on this. We're not driven to eat foods because of its B vitamin content or because of its vitamin C content.
Yes. Not in our natural.
We're going to get it
way.
Along with it.
Right.
Yes. If that.
Right.
And again, if we're paying attention, you know, we eat geographically and the food is here. Does it provide everything that we need? And I understand. I mean, there's people living in the Arctic Circle. There's people living at the equator. I mean, we're like cockroaches. Yes, we can adapt.
Right.
To eating all sorts of different kinds of things. We have a very flexible metabolism that way. But it's also a metabolism based on famine, not based on excess. And we're dealing with the excess.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking all these calories, all these extra calories, and how many people are just carrying them around in their fat cells? I mean, that would be a good question. Maybe somebody's calculated this. How much, if we calculated the amount of fat that's stored in the United States, right, around our middle, like how long could we exist on that? If we took everybody together and said this is the weight level, and I mean, we could probably do an exercise to say, wow, we could live for, you know, 5 years. I don't know. We could exist for a period of time because we're carrying along with us.
Right.
And understand that's beneficial, yes, to carry that energy with you. But yet people that are carrying that energy, they can't access it, right? It's just not available to them. And then they eat 5 meals a day. Like, why would you eat if you're, you know, 70 pounds overweight?
Mm-hmm.
You've got 3 months of energy stored in your body and you don't use it.
Right. Because it's not accessible.
It's not accessible. So how do you make it accessible? And then I got to monkey with your diet and do kinds of things instead of be like, well, why would I eat? Like, you would think it would just, like, normally turn off.
Right.
But it's the food industry, unfortunately, I think, spinning their message and making those foods available and allowing us to do things very quickly to continue to get hits.
Yeah.
I mean, we're using food like a drug. Refined carbohydrates act like a drug. And a drug in an energy sort of way, but giving us a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
And then they couch it in all sorts of things to make it more palatable to us. And then they make that stand out, and then we don't want to eat the carrot, and we don't want to eat the sugar snap pea, right? We want to eat the Skittle. I've told you that story.
Mm-hmm. Or even the bar, honestly. I mean, now they've got... I mean, I remember when I first started buying Annalena bars, you know, because they would have a snack at grade school. And, you know, you couldn't get ones with chocolate sauce on them or with marshmallows in them, you know. Now I look at the bars and I say, wow, it's really become a dessert bar, not so much just a quick, you know, like you say, energy source.
Take a look at the grocery store and how many bars are in the grocery store.
Unbelievable.
How many brands of yogurt are there? You notice yogurt thing?
Oh,
the yogurt is like, wow. And we think of yogurt as a health food. I don't know, most of that yogurt is candy.
Oh, with the sugar content?
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, they're adding the sugar.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know.
I mean...
You can eat plain yogurt. If it was only plain yogurt available, how much plain yogurt? Yeah, and it's not a highly marketable item, yes? But you could add maple syrup to it. You could add a banana to it. Yeah, you could do that and make it tasty.
That's what Annalena does, yeah. I won't let her buy the sugar.
I don't know if I shared the story with my eldest son. So this is the yogurt story, yes? So...
Okay.
I would buy plain yogurt. That's what was available. Not even vanilla yogurt.
The Greek stuff. It's Greek, and it gives you the fat content.
Well, Greek maybe. Greek yogurt just means they strain the whey out, so it's higher protein. It's just basically a concentrated source. But plain yogurt, right? Mm-hmm. Plain sour. Yeah, it tastes sour.
Oh, yeah. I don't like the stuff, personally, for that reason.
And he was always... You know, and there's lactose intolerance in my family history, but it seems that yogurt is fine. I tolerate yogurt fine.
Fermentation.
The fermentation helps. It would always be, Dad, can you buy like key lime pie yogurt, right? And he'd be like, oh, it's organic. Yes, it's organic key lime pie yogurt.
It's natural.
I'm like, Sam, no, it's sugar. It's all sugar. Look at what they've added to it. And you know, it was just kind of one of these things based on attrition. I'm like, I have plain yogurt at home, and you can add some fruit to it, right? You could make it into key lime pie yogurt, but you have to do that.
Right.
And my whole point is probably if you add the sugar to it, you still won't add as much as the food industry puts in it.
And it will be better quality. Maple syrup is not the same as sugar added to yogurt.
Yeah, it's not that much different, but you're right. It's not the same, but it's more similar than it is different.
Okay.
But what's important is that you're controlling that.
Right.
And, I mean, he could easily just dump in.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean,
hopefully
I did that as
oversight.
A kid. Yes. I mean, you could take, you know, cornflakes and turn them into frosted flakes.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got the sugar bowl,
totally.
Right? You put it on top, but then it ends up being, you know, sugar milk, too. But that I learned that, yes, because my mom didn't buy frosted flakes, but I figured out I could kind of make frosted flakes myself, yes?
Right. I used to get my mom to buy grapefruit, and you know what I did with grapefruit.
Yeah, you put sugar on it.
But I'm eating fruit, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the yogurt story is, but I got plain yogurt at home. You can eat that. And he's like, no. And this is starting at age 7 or something, right? And this goes on for
10 years.
13 years,
yeah, right?
13
right.
years.
Right.
And never, never while he was living with me did he ever eat the plain yogurt.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
Right.
So I failed experiment, yes? So I tried. And I tried to say, this is what's available.
But you didn't buy the key lime pie.
I never bought the key lime pie yogurt.
So did it fail? It just was something that he actually didn't need.
Exactly. Well, there's the rest of the story, of course, right, that I don't stop there. So whatever, he leaves and, you know, he's no longer living with me. And this is probably, he's 27 now. So probably 3 or 4 years ago, he came back and he said, hey, Dad, you know what? I'm eating plain yogurt, and I kind of like it. I'm like, hallelujah, yes, it worked. It just took 20 years
or
13 years or whatever it was, and it was just the attrition point. But he's like, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Right? And he's big cottage cheese too, right? So, but that's just the thing, and then he's adding fruit to it, right? But he's figured that out to say, hey, I can start with a base, and I don't have to start with that sugar base.
Right. Annalena knows, if we're in the grocery store, we rarely shop together anymore, but... If we're in the grocery store and she wants something, I'll say, bring it over. And she brings it over. And then I say, look at the label. And she knows what that means. And she may slump her shoulders and go put it right back on the shelf. Because what I'm looking for is, how much have they added to it? And of course, if they've added sugar, no dice. Because there are ways, like you say, to recreate a lot of things, you know.
And to keep it from your palate being at that carrot level.
Thank you, yes.
Instead of being at the Skittle level, and then it's really hard to compete. It's really hard to then go to other things. So the food industry knows that.
Right. They want your taste buds on 10.
Yes, correct.
Whereas if you're eating food from scratch, your taste buds are at 3, and then that dessert is at a 7. And that's amazing. But you still go back to, enjoying natural, truly natural foods, not the foods that just say natural on the package.
Right. This is a problem with the refined carbohydrates because now they have that in a source that they can add what they need to add to it, right? It just becomes all Frankenfoods.
Right.
Because now they can add the sugar, they can add the fat, they add bad fat, and they could potentially add good fat, but good fat costs more money. So they use bad fat because it's a perfect mix of fat and carbohydrate, right? Because there's no satiety. You'll eat a lot of it. They know that. So fat and carbohydrate together are like
two peas in a pod. And correct me if I'm wrong, but even within the industry, there are overages. And so they're dealing with a surplus of soybean oil, right? Or a surplus of whatever it is. And so they're literally making products to make money, to profit from overages in the agricultural industry that they've created as well, which has nothing to do with health or anything. It has everything to do, as you say, with just profit. Oh my gosh, we have this overage of such and such, so now we're going to make this product line, sell it to the American people, tell them that they're always hungry and, you know, for this and that.
And they have it in a form that's more preservable, for example, right? So they've got it and they've got, okay, we know the shelf life of this and we know how to winterize the oil, for example, so we can extend the shelf life of that. And they'll do it.
Good point. Right?
That's their motivation. So that's what they're motivated for. That's fine. It's just that if we're motivated by profit alone, we have a problem.
Yeah. What's the effect? Right.
Yeah. So anyways, there's is that the intro? That's a pretty long intro, right?
Yes, and I have to break again to say.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Ratay and Christina DeRocher. And thank you so much for tuning in to listener-supported independent radio 91.9 WDRT. I'm going to plug Paul's year-long lecture series that is happening at the Commons on Jefferson Street. And the next one is on Saturday, July 8th, from 8:30 until 10 in the morning. This is his Obstacles to Cure lecture. And the July subject is inflammation. Is inflammation the cause or the effect? Keep in mind that from 8:30 to 9, the beginning half of his time, you can bring any questions that you have regarding inflammation or any other naturopathic topic, and then he will have a lecture from 9 until 10, and it is a free will donation situation. So let money not be an object to bar your entrance.
Yes. Thanks, Christina. So let's skip ahead maybe in our little prepared sheet here.
Where are we going?
Let's run experiments, yes? So,
okay.
So things that we can do, right? How do we deal with these refined carbohydrates and try to, you know, manage this? So maybe some of these are obvious, right? So don't buy anything with a label on it. And if it has a label, then you better start reading the ingredients and then saying, oh, what's actually in this? And why did they add this, right? And is it really a food?
And please Google natural flavors.
Oh, natural flavors,
I know there's at least one whole documentary on this totally fabricated idea that people look at the, you know, and it'll even say natural lemon flavor. It will give something very specific that sounds like they're, you know, shaving off the lemon skin. And it's absolutely factory made. And I mean, you can kind of tell too. I mean, honestly, we just bought popsicles again this year because it's summertime. And somehow this particular brand, you eat it and it's just too much. The flavor is just too much. And sure enough, I look on the package and I don't think this was the case the last time we bought them. I think they've changed their recipe, but it does say natural flavors. And what they do is they just take something that, you know, they take a strawberry flavor, the natural strawberry flavor, and they translate it into the chemical compounds and then they recreate it in the factory. And it is, you know, again, it's that taste bud spectrum. Where do you want your taste buds to be? Can you appreciate a raw carrot, or do you need the popsicle that tastes like, you know, God, fruit punch is just exploding in your mouth? It's just insane.
This is the idea of clean label.
Yeah.
Clean label means that they don't want chemicals listed on the label. So they use citrus fiber. So citrus fiber sounds benign, yes?
Yes.
But what is citrus fiber? What's behind that? And what's the processed food or the additive that they derive from citrus fiber, right? It's not, they're not lying, but they're not actually even telling you exactly their patented thing that they put in there, because on the label they can put citrus fiber.
Right. So in other words, the citrus fiber may have been the origin, but what did they do to it before they actually added it?
Yes.
Yes.
Major problem.
Be very, very, very wary and be very careful. And thank goodness for the internet. Look it up every time, and chances are you won't want to buy it.
Yeah. So I've had three patients that have their headaches have disappeared from eliminating LaCroix water.
How interesting. Somebody told me the other day, actually, that LaCroix was one of the good ones, that they were literally using the smoke or the off-gassing of fruits and vegetables as essences in their soda. They're not. I realize it's not soda. It's just carbonated water. But
I mean, that's what the experience is, because they've done an elimination diet. It's still the headaches. And somehow, wow, we got to take the water out.
Amazing.
And you call them and say, well, what's in the natural flavorings? You're not going to get very far if you call them and ask that question. It's just, you know, trial and error. Is it possibly something that I'm doing?
Right. And there are children in Annalena's class, actually, who are allergic to food coloring, even.
Yeah. So we have to be aware that this is just if it's got a label on it, can you read the label and just be wary of things that are on there? I mean, if it's a red pepper, you just buy something that is bulk, right? Shop the perimeter of the grocery store.
Right.
As soon as you go in the middle, whether you're at the co-op or not, it doesn't matter. The quality's going down.
Be scrupulous. Yeah.
Be scrupulous. Scrupulous. Okay, so that's one. Next one, dilute your carbohydrates. I think I've talked about this. I think I talked about it last week too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So diluting your carbohydrates. So don't concentrate those carbohydrates, right? So how do we dilute it? How do we make it so it's not getting that huge surge of energy, right? So when we refine it, we're actually concentrating the carbohydrate content out, or we're concentrating the energy of it, right? So that becomes kind of the empty calorie component. And understand, that's a driving force. If we're eating something and we get quick energy from it, that's drug-like, yes? I mean, the food industry is going to do that all day, because that's how we can reactively eat throughout the day.
And one of the things you did say earlier in our little sheet is there are times for that, right?
Yeah, there are times for that.
When you're hanging off the rock cliff.
When you're hanging on the rock cliff.
God bless you.
You need that energy and you need to do that, or you're running a marathon. Yeah,
right,
so those
right.
are in those cases, now you're saying, how do I maximize my energy by getting those kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and different ways you can do that. Yes, you can get those gels. I mean, all the things that runners will do to kind of maximize that. They know that, right? They're trying to work with their biochemistry. But at least on some level, they're working with their biochemistry for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Say, I need this for 3 hours versus this is the way that I eat and I'm, you know, going to sit at a desk all day, and perhaps the energy that I need when I sit at a desk all day is different than if I'm out, you know, cutting down trees or something like that. Yes.
Right, right.
And theoretically, our body should tell us that, yes.
That it's like, too much.
Or what do we need?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we respond to that? Right. I mean, I think of Paul Bunyan in the Lumberjack Breakfast, right, where there's pancakes and pancakes and pancakes, yes?
Right.
So the idea, but probably that energy that they're getting, I mean, pancakes are like pure energy, but how much energy do they need and how much energy they're going to expend in the next 4 hours?
Right.
Completely different.
Right.
Yes? So perhaps there's more tolerance of carbohydrates there. Whereas what I see today is a lot of carbohydrate intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've lost the ability to kind of manage that properly. And then we go overkill and we end up with reactive eating and we're on that blood sugar roller coaster all day, right? And this is a precursor to diabetes and all sorts of other things that happen as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we can nip it early, why wouldn't we do that? Anyway, so how we kind of dilute the carbohydrates is we can, you know, we can add or we can retain fiber. We could add fat, we could add protein, right? Sort of eating mixed meals, right? Or just eating things that have carbohydrates and fats and proteins in them. But the fiber is an interesting one, right? So again, we may extract the fiber out of it and then add it back to the food versus just saying what is inherently native to this carbohydrate source that I'm eating, right? So like a bean is a perfect example, yes? I mean, it's really hard to remove the fiber from a bean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there. But it makes it that you got to cook it. It takes time. It may cause digestive disturbance, right? Because you're not used to that. But it's funny. You want to, you know, it's always with the bean thing. Oh, well, beans give me gas. Well, that tells me you don't eat very many beans.
Oh.
I mean, is that your experience? I don't know. But beans, if you eat beans, you become much more tolerant of them. They don't cause gas. But when you don't eat them,
yeah.
When you eat them once in a while, they're like, oh my gosh, it's a problem.
Right. That's actually true. I never noticed it because I did eat beans regularly for 25 years when I was macrobiotic.
Yes.
And now I bet they would cause me some issues because I'm eating more meat.
Exactly. And then, you know, how do you find the balance between those?
Right. Yeah. Maybe you have to commit yourself to eating beans. Well, and yeah. I mean, 2 to 3 times a week, that should probably do it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But again, it's that adaptation mode. But the fiber is there. And when you start adding fiber to your diet, if you take psyllium or whatever fiber supplement, it's always like, oh, we got to go slow, because if you do too much, it's going to cause GI upset. Because your body's not even regulated or acclimated to the higher fiber there.
Well, right.
So then you got to get used to it. So again, it's that microbiome will change based on what's going on. It's going to like provide you support. Sorry, I need some water.
That's all right.
So that's, you know, so whether we add the fiber or we retain the fiber, right? So retaining means we're just eating foods that contain the fiber in them. And beans are a great source of that, and whole, you know, and again, perhaps a whole grain too, but the whole grain, I guess I want to comment on this for a moment. So whole grain's a little bit of a misnomer, right? Like I said, you can eat Cocoa Puffs now made with whole grains, but it's made with whole wheat flour.
Mm-hmm.
And whole wheat flour, I mean, it has B vitamins in it, it has fiber in it, but if we really look at what it has, the effect it has on your blood glucose, it's exactly the same as white flour.
Right.
So they're peddling something that's, you know, theoretically better, but it's not really the same as an unprocessed grain, right? A whole grain, if somebody's putting that on the label, it's because they're trying to sell it. And how would you get a whole grain in Cocoa Puffs? That just seems counterintuitive.
Right.
Yes. So yes. The idea is that how do I get that stone ground wheat, or how do I actually find bread or whatever else that's not made with flour? So flour is not the number one ingredient, but maybe it's stone ground wheat, because stone ground wheat's going to be a lot different.
Yeah, right.
Like Ezekiel bread, for example, right? Ezekiel bread, I mean, that's thing dense. You got to chew that. Yes, there's no flour. It's flourless.
Yeah, but we know this as traditional bread. I mean, that's
correct.
Know, many cultures.
It's what we used to do, and now we don't have that. We have all these cheap, quick, simple, fluffy breads that are available, and we love them, right? I mean, yeah, there's certainly appeal to that, but... how can we go back to what we used to do,
right?
And that's just having not having that flour that we can turn into, you know, 500 different things.
Paul, I'm so sorry, but I should have given you a 5-minute warning. We're done with our talk already this
Whoa,
morning. I can't believe
go.
It.
There you go.
That went so fast.
Yes.
All right. So, do you have anything, do you want to wrap up, or should we literally wrap up?
Let's see. Okay, I guess the last one, right? So how much time do we have?
None?
We have none. Do we start at 8?
Yes.
So we're at 52?
Yes.
Oh, time management.
I know. I apologize. I was very good about the 20 and 40, but I forgot the 5-minute.
Yeah, so don't eat pre-digested food. So that's the other thing. So the pre-digestion... So this is the idea that we should be working our digestive tract. So the digestive tract is meant to be able to extract and break down and, you know, to do the processing of the food that we eat to make it into a source that we can absorb. And when we refine a carbohydrate, we're basically pre-digesting it so that our digestive tract doesn't have to work as hard. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Again, if I'm climbing a rock face or I'm running a marathon, that would be a time and a place where I need to, like, cut to the chase and not turn on the digestive process. But for the most part, we should be expending energy to digest our food.
Correct.
To be able to do that. And again, the pre-digestion is perhaps a spectrum, right? Because we can do some of that. We can cook in the kitchen, right? We do that to make food more available. The wheat berries that we talked about, right? You have to soak them. You have to cook them. You're not going to eat them raw, yes?
Yeah.
So this is the idea of how much pre-digestion do we do? And that even... is an effect with eating animals as well, right? So animals are pre-digesting the plants that they ate.
Right.
So perhaps, you know, eating plants and eating raw food is really, you know, sort of maybe primal energy. I don't know if that's the right word, but the energy we get from that. And if we eat an animal has already transformed that a little bit. So we're not getting that same vitality that we would get from a kind of, again, a raw plant source, right? So this is the value of a raw diet, yes, and value there, but just the idea of who do we want to pre-digest our food? Do you want to do it in your kitchen by the cooking and soaking and things that you do? Do you want to have an animal do that has now converted that carbohydrate into a fat source and we're eating the fat from the animal? Or is it that we're going to trust the food industry to do that? Yes. Then again,
I think you just put them in the order of importance.
Yes, exactly. So the food industry perhaps is who we don't want to trust on this. Yes. And again, there's not that I said a time and a place, but how do we avoid that as much as possible?
Right.
And then we get caught up in the organic and we get caught up in that instead of saying, I need to buy the raw materials and figure out a way that it works together. And I'm looking for that je ne sais quoi. And I need to, you know, I need to cook my beans. I'm not going to eat my beans raw. Right. But what's the sort of minimal amount, right? How do I blend those together instead of just allowing somebody else to do it for me? And then it's fat, salt, sweet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much, Paul. I look forward to these always. We'll see you next month, listener. Thanks again for tuning in to 91.9 WDRT.
Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.